Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Top Order Podcast, another episode of the Cricketing Hall of Fame coming your way. This time, we're counting down numbers 30 through 26 on Michael Baldwin's Labour of Love. We've certainly got one of his heroes in this list of five, all coming up on the Top Order Podcast Hall of Fame. Stay tuned. Baldy, well, I've got to say, sort of glad I'm not in the room with you this week with the first person on this list, because I might get covered in your drool, because we're going to talk first up about one of your cricketing heroes as we continue the countdown of the Cricketing Hall of Fame. So without further ado, which New South Welshman have we got here at number 30 on the list?
Oh, that's good from you, Adam. That's very good. Look, boys, of course, you never forget your first, do you? And what I'm talking about, of course, is cricket bats. You never forget your first cricket bat. My first cricket bat I received Christmas Day. I think I was 9, maybe 10. And it was a Duncan Fernley extra cover. Beautiful bat. Has pure white on the back. Had the green grip, the lime green grip, and the big sort of triangular set of stumps on the back. And Duncan Fernley on the front extra cover. And the reason that it was a Duncan Fernley, of course, was my cricketing hero when I was 9. Was Alan Robert Border, of course, New South Welshman, born in New South Wales, played a lot of his state cricket for Queensland, and I guess from 1979 until 1993-4 played for Australia, 156 tests. And he was my hero, not just because he was a kind of gritty left-hander, but he just looked a lot like my dad as well. You know, he had the auburn hair, he had the moustache, red moustache, which my dad rocked until I was about 4 or 5. So he had the 80s moustache as well. Gritty left-handed bat. Slight difference in skill level. But an ultimate cricketer for Australia in the 1980s, Alan Border. 156 tests. 153 of those were in a row. Back to back to back. 93 tests as captain. 93 consecutive tests as captain. And that's the second most as a captain all time. In his career, he massed 11,174 runs at an average of 50.56. Of course, the first Australian player to get past the 10,000 run barrier. And also, he held the record for most runs as a Test cricketer for a while. Highest score of 205 amongst his 27 Test centuries. And he also has, I'm just looking down here, he also has 39 Test wickets in 98 innings as a bowler at an average of 39. So if he had a few more wickets, he could actually be sort of plus minus 13 or so, which is up there with, you know, Ravi Jadeja, better than a lot of the top four or big four all-rounders that we talk about. He has two test match fifers. He has a test match tenfer against, I think it was against the West Indies, as a bowler. As part of that was a 7 for 46, I think he had in that test match. So underrated, or sorry, not underrated, but underused, I think, as a test bowler, Alan Border, because he was the captain. He sort of tended to under bowl himself. But yeah, they're the fifth best test bowling figures ever in a match by a captain. Wow. For Alan Border. And of course, for me, this, having him at 30, and I'll just preempt this because I'm sure it's going to be a question. Alan Border is at 30, not just because he was a great batter for Australia, but because of his leadership in one of the darkest hours or periods for Australian cricket after the retirement of Greg Chappell, of Dennis Lilly, of Rod Marsh, and of course then the tearful resignation of the captaincy of Kim Hughes in 1984. Australian cricket, well, nadirs don't get much more nadirish than 1984 for Australia, and of course come Alan Border, and it took him 5 years to win back the Ashes, but of course then we sort of held it for a while after that. But he set up that belief, that mental belief, that sheer determination and will to win cricket games that took him, you know, at least Joe Root's tenure, 5 years as a test captain, just to get to a position where he was able to start winning tests for Australia.
I'll just quickly jump in because, yeah, I think I missed really Alan Border's career, and I didn't really get to see, you know, I kind of caught the end of it. 92 World Cup, I think we've talked about a number of times, is sort of my first real entry point into cricket. You touched on it there with the leadership, but I guess what was it about him that he became your hero? Because I think that leadership isn't really something you necessarily notice as a 9-10 year old, is it?
Oh, I think so, in that he was the captain, he was the man in charge, and he did it because he just put such a high value on his wicket. He was determined that it doesn't matter what's going on around me, I'm just not going to get out, and I'm going to stare down the most fearsome bowlers in the history of world cricket at the other end, in the form of the West Indies, in the form of that England bowling attack in the 80s, was not far behind that. And he go, and I'm just not going to get out. I'm only going to play 3 shots. I'm a bit like Alistair Cook. I'm going to play a square cut, and I'm going to push the ball through the offside, through the covers, tuck one around off the hip maybe, and that's about it. And I'm just not going to give you my wicket, and I'm going to place a tremendous amount of value on that, and you're going to have to prize me out. And as a batter who didn't have much skill, all I really had was, okay, well, I'm just going to try and not get out, and I'm going to bat for as long as I can, and if I get a, you know, nudge a couple around, then so be it. So to me, Alan Border is the ultimate nudger, and he personifies and typifies that, not uniquely Australian, but so almost quintessentially Australian spirit, that in order to get me out, you're almost going to have to take my life as well as my wicket, because I'm just not going to give it to you that easy. And I mean, you talk about his leadership. His leadership was as a leader, not as a winner, because he didn't win a series as captain until 1987. He took over in 1984. So it's a long time before he won a test series as captain. Didn't win the Ashes until 1989. Most captains would have stepped down by a long way before then, or would have been pushed. So such was the lack of alternates for Alan Border, and such was his determination in bringing the team together, that he was able to pull Australia out of the quagmire and then into a period of success.
Guys, I guess I'm a little bit older than both of you in the room there, and for me, I think he's the bridge between that very, very successful Australian era of what, probably the mid-90s onwards, really. And Border, it's really strange. You kind of, this is going to turn into a bit of a Duncan Fernley commercial, but you know, my first memory of him is actually linked to that as well. My dad was lucky enough to represent my cricket league, the Birmingham League, back in the UK, in a centenary match against a Duncan Fernley 11, which had Alan Border in it. I was the recipient of a Duncan Fernley Magnum as a result of that, because I actually met Duncan himself, and he wrote my name and address down on a brown envelope that was in his pocket, and then sent me a bat afterwards, actually with posters of all of the players in that stable at that time that included Alan Border and Ian Botham. But beautiful. Yeah, I guess it really is that sort of legacy that he really set up, I think, Steve Waugh, Ricky Ponting, in terms of the way that they captained that side, and probably the pride and that little bit of grumpiness, I think, that you probably needed. You know, famously didn't talk to David Gar and Ian Botham in that 1989 Ashes. Said, you know, I'll have a beer with you after the season, but I'm not even going to talk to you whilst we're on the field, because we're here to win a cricket series. So that definitely the legacy that I think he had. I know we're going to go over time, Bordy. I do want to ask you one question on this. His average, and, you know, obviously his run scoring kind of puts him puts him up there. How might he have been a bit higher? Because I'm sure we're going to talk about some players that maybe on the eye test in terms of their flamboyance or their strike rate might be a little bit higher. Are those the things that kind of have him down at this stage of the list rather than that little bit higher?
Oh, yeah. Look, I mean, his average at 50 and a half is probably the thing that brings him back towards the pack. He made 2,700s. He made 63 test 50s, though, which is third all time. Anyway. So he got past 50 a lot. I mean, the thing that brings him up, in my view, is that he averaged 74 against the West Indies in the West Indies in 83-4. He's the only guy who averaged more than 65 in the entire 1980s going to the West Indies as a batter. Wow. So he gets ticks for that. But, yeah, their overall average of 50 and a half, and I think if you play long enough, your average kind of comes back to the pack a little bit, doesn't it? You know, even with Tendulkar, who was averaging 57, 58 at one point in his career, finished with 53-4 because he had such tremendous longevity. Alan Border was the same. So, yeah, I think it's probably the average that brings him back. I'm just going to leave you with my favourite Alan Border story. So my favourite Alan Border story, I can't remember if it's 89 Ashes or a little bit earlier. Craig McDermott had a run-in. Now, Craig McDermott is a Queenslander, and Alan Border was his Queensland captain. And Craig McDermott lipped off to Alan Border in a tour match in the lead-up to a test. And Alan Border says, "Don't you test me. If you're going to test me, I'll put you on the next plane home." And if he's prepared to do that to a fellow Queenslander, that just tells you how tough and how uncompromising he was as a leader. So, you know, that's my favourite Alan Border story. That and telling Dean Jones that if he doesn't get back out there in India and when he was scoring the double hundred and spewing all over the place, we'll get a fat cat like Greg Ritchie out there, whose nickname was Fat Cat, listeners, by the way. I'm not casting aspersions on Greg Ritchie. We'll get a Queensland out there who'll do a job properly, and you know, so get back out there and show your mettle. I love Alan Border. He's just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
One of the classic testimonial matches of all time as well. We better move on, Binksy.
Yeah, let's move on. And look, I think we're talking about high batting averages and long careers. We move on to India for the next person on the list. So, bit of a divisive character now in the modern game. Who are we going to talk about at number 29, Baldy?
I've just looked at all my notes here. They're almost exactly the same. Powers of concentration, doesn't give his wicket away, defence first. I've just got the wall before the wall here. We're talking about Sunil Gavaskar, the veteran of 125 tests for India and 10,112 runs. The first man ever to make 10,000 runs in test cricket, I believe, with 34 test hundreds as an opening bat. Gee, that's an impressive stat. And an overall average of 51.12, 45 50s, and an average above replacement player that's about 17th all time. And that 3,400, that's 6th all time. I think I've got that stat right. That's incredible, isn't it, really? Most hundreds as an opener. Doesn't have a great bowling average. Took one wicket at an average of about 200 and something. And a strike rate of about 340. But if you have a look at his peak series, 70-71 against the West Indies in the West Indies, averaged a tremendous amount. You know, West Indies in India, averaged 90. Australia in Australia, averaged 100. He was just a prolific, prolific opening batter for India as a player. And I looked at his career really mostly as a player. I've kind of not ignored his controversial comments or his propensity to be controversial afterwards in the media, but I've chosen to, maybe I'm a little bit biased, chosen to focus on his batting excellence as the reason for having him in the top 30 in the Hall of Fame.
Baldy, question for you. Have you got a comparison of that home v away record? Obviously a prolific run scorer. How does that stack up?
I've actually got it here, Binksy. It's and it was one that's I guess surprised me a little bit because you often see the home average being higher, but his away average is slightly higher. I mean, it's very, very close. It's 50 to 52, I believe. But yeah, the thing that actually struck me the most out of him. I mean, you mentioned the West Indies stuff. His first 8 innings in Test cricket. Series against the West Indies, he scored 65, 67, 116, 64 not out. Then he failed, he only scored 1. But then he made it up for it because he scored 117 not out, 124, and then 220. That has to be the greatest start to international cricket ever, surely.
Be. Surely.
Eight innings.
How many hundreds does he have?
That's got to be 1,000 runs just about. It's just absolutely unreal.
He's got four hundreds in his first eight bats and a double hundred.
Against the, you know, against the West Indies. I mean, they weren't quite the West Indies of that, you know, the great West Indian side.
Still,
that we
though.
Talked about. But, yeah, geez, just unbelievable stuff from Gavaskar.
Wow. I mean, he's four double hundreds, three series averaging over 90. The one that stood out for me, 732 runs in a series as captain. That's the most runs by any batter in a series as captain, apparently, in a regular sort of, you know, bilateral test series, you know, ICC Test Championship notwithstanding. Look, he has been controversial in his career. He has courted controversy off the field for some of his comments and the way he sort of interacts on social media. Look, I tend to ignore social media these days, and I think, you know, it's quite easy to be controversial on social media, I suppose. So I've tended to ignore that and just focus on his batting and the belief that he gave the Indian team, who weren't all that, not, I won't say that they were unprofessional, but he took them to a new level of professionalism as part of his career.
Did any of you guys get much eye test on him?
Yeah, look, I guess it's really good that he's one of those players. He's a little bit before our time, isn't he, really, all of us in the room. But there's still plenty of footage out there. Reminiscent for me, you can see a lot of Sachin Tendulkar, or you can see a lot of Gavaskar, I suppose, in Sachin Tendulkar. Not just the fact that I think he handed down the pads to him, you know, those molded pads that Tendulkar was so famous for wearing, that Dhoni now sports as well. Lots of sort of little idiosyncrasies that you've seen probably in some of those Indian players that have followed him. And yeah, look, just a really graceful player. Quite a short man, diminutive man, played the pull shot quite well. Really, really fast on his feet. So yeah, that's what I probably took away from that that eye test. It's a really difficult one because I think we've all interacted with him more probably as a commentator than as a player in our era. And I just can't quite get my head around but the fact that I really... I'm trying to unlink how good he was as a player with how much I really dislike listening to him as a commentator.
Yeah, he's a divisive guy, really, as a commentator. He does have that. The only other stat that I just wanted to touch on before we move on, 47 tests as captain of India, 30 draws out of 47 tests. They played a lot of draw cricket over that period of time. That's the third highest for any captain that's captained 25 tests or more.
Well, let's move on to another batter in the list. I guess one bit of interest in Sunil Gavaskar we didn't mention. He was the former sheriff of Mumbai as well, apparently. So there you go, board. He didn't come up on your stat sheet.
Did not have that, no.
So, look, we've got a real batting theme to this episode of the Hall of Fame. We're going to go to another veteran of over 100 tests and over 10,000 test runs. A modern player. Who have we got on the list next, Baldy?
Yeah, I didn't mean to do this, but all five of the batters that we're going to talk tonight, we're going to talk about five batters. They're all members of the 10,000 Run Club. I think actually most of the people that we're going to have in the top 20, if they're a batter, are going to have 10,000 runs or pretty similar. So we're going to talk about a Pakistan veteran of 118 tests, 10,099 runs at an average of 52.5. Again, with 34 test hundreds and 33 50s. I'm talking about Yunus Khan, a member of the 10,000 Run Club. But I think he's the most under the radar of any of these members of the 10,000 Run Club because, if I'm honest, I probably remember him playing three, maybe four innings that I remember watching him play. Mm. But he's amassed 10,000 runs. I think he has one of the highest averages He has one of the highest averages of any batter or the most number of runs of any batter in the fourth inning. So he's a fourth inning specialist. He's just a tremendous, tremendous player. I mean, his highest score, 313 there. He has a 50s to 100s ratio of better than 1-1, so he's got more 100s than 50s, which is a pretty rare club. You know, he's a tremendous, tremendous player. Again, 34 test 100s and some of those peak series averaging over 100 as well.
He must have one of the better ratios of 100s per test. I know you do that stat because... Yeah.
Top 15, 16 100s per 100 tests or 100 innings. And, yeah, it's 14th all-time amongst the players that qualified for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, very, very impressive.
What do we want to talk about, Yunus Khan? I mean, he's just one of those guys that just so quietly went about his business and accumulated runs and runs and upon runs upon runs year after year after year. But he did it without fuss. He did it without controversy. He just went about his job as part of that big Pakistan middle order that seemed sort of almost impregnable at times with Inzamam and with Yunus and then with Mohammad Yusuf as well. It just feels like to me this guy is probably the most almost underrated but unheralded member of this Hall of Fame because he's got 10,000 runs and I don't have anything really to say about the guy other than his tremendous stats.
Yeah, look, I probably saw quite a lot of Yunus Khan and I guess in my era as well. He played a fair amount of county cricket, so I think right in saying border, you might have this closer to hand than me. Definitely played for, I think, Nottinghamshire and Yorkshire. Might have even had a stint later in his career as well in county cricket. And his record against England, I just remember, you know, seeing him score a hell of a lot of runs against England. Certainly recall a big double 100 that he got. And I think he got 6 or 7 in his career. So chances are you're going to score against England when you play that much test cricket against them. And then probably the other thing that kind of really I think about when I think of Yunus Khan is really how he kind of stuck around sort of, you know, relatively late. And as Pakistan cricket was sort of starting to have that real momentum and that, I was going to say renaissance, but that's the wrong word. And then continued on from a coaching perspective as well. And really sort of, you know, cemented that legacy. And I think a lot of the modern Pakistani batters particularly talk about the influence he had on them in their career as he was in that coaching setup for the PCB for a period of time as well. But yeah, quite graceful, quite underrated. You know, I guess, you know, a little bit of a cliche, but very strong with that sort of leg side, you know, flick and the way that he'd hit the spinners through the leg side, really smother the spin. But yeah, like you say, Baldy, we're going to come onto a couple of players, and he's probably one of those where you look at the record and you don't probably put him in the same echelons, but you can't argue with the numbers, particularly that conversion rate.
Mm. My overriding memory of Yunus Khan is him actually with the ball when he bowled. New Zealand listeners, I'm sure, will remember from this era when he bowled an over to Craig McMillan that went for 26, which was a world record at the time, and everyone was kind of, you know, sort of one of those moments in Test cricket. The game was kind of meandering on, and suddenly, you know, McMillan's there with one ball to go, and everyone's going, "Oh, he can get the record here, he can get the record here," and he whacks it away and scores that. But the thing I always look for when we do these Hall of Fames is around the home and away and all the averages and stuff that we just talked about with Gavaskar. But in doing that, it showed me really, I guess, how tricky it must have been for Pakistan as a cricket nation. I know we talked about, you know, all that sort of stuff about countries now just going back there to test cricket, but he played over 100 tests. He only played 19 games at home in his whole career. Played 28 at a neutral venue, 71 of those games away. So
that's tough, eh?
That is hard. I think that's probably something that doesn't really get talked about enough for those players in that era because, yeah, you're on the road all the time. Even when you're at a neutral venue, you're still on the road, essentially. So,
and you're not in front of your own fans. Yep. You know, well, not to say that the Pakistan fans didn't come out and support them in the UAE, but it's a different level. It's a different atmosphere than when they are at home. So, yeah, you have to sympathise with these guys. I mean, we've seen it in sports all over the world now, teams having to travel and be based in other countries. New Zealanders have experienced that with their rugby league teams and with their basketball teams and to a certain extent with their football teams. But these guys were doing it year after year after year. Yeah. And that touring life that we know is tough for a cricketer was doubly tough for these guys. So absolute props and credit to all of those Pakistan players that played most of their career never having played and enjoyed a test in their home country. Mm.
Well, Baldy, remarkably, we're going to move on to another member, and I think you mentioned it, of this 10,000 run club. In fact, probably pretty close to 12,000 test runs. If my maths is correct, just the 131 centuries across his professional career. Where are we going next on our Hall of Fame?
Let's go over to the West Indies and let's talk about Shivnarine Chanderpool, one of the all-time I won't say classical batters, but
quirkies.
But a tremendous, tremendous career. Let's go over the stats and we'll get to the eye test. So just covering off the stats, 164 tests. Wow. 164 tests. 11,867 runs for the West Indies and an average of 51.37. 30 hundreds and 66 half centuries. That's second all time, and he's got an average above replacement player that's plus 10.06. So that's good enough for 24th all time. I mean, his career is all about the longevity, isn't it, really? And the ratio of runs to technique that is probably second all time behind Stephen Smith, I think, in terms of number of runs scored versus technique that he scored them with. I mean, it was a very, very peculiar, very unique stance that he set himself up with. But really, what he was trying to do is trying to line the ball up and then get himself into a good position when the ball was bowled. And actually,
he always was in a good position. You kind of go on and it got a lot of coverage, his stance. But then as soon as the ball was actually delivered, he was bang on right there, ready to go.
Absolutely. And it's a bit like, you know, it's the Rory Burns, the Steve Smith conversation. Are they in a good position to hit the ball when the ball is bowled to them and when the ball reaches them as a batter? Now, there is more to go wrong for Shiv Chanderpaul than there is for Zach Crawley, but you can't argue with the effectiveness. I mean, after he had that heel surgery and he actually wasn't injured anymore, he went on an incredible run of sort of 8 years or something, Stuart. Me through the stats?
From the start of 2007 to the end of 2014, 8-year span, 59 tests, 99 innings, he averaged 69. With 1600s and 2550s.
Over 8 years.
Over 8 years. That's what you call a peak. Mm. And I mean, you guys, we just talked about Yunus Khan as being maybe one of the most underrated. I actually think, like, when you talk about great batters of all time, there's no mention of Chanderpaul. Chanderpaul is not, I feel like, well, maybe I'm, again, listening to the wrong conversation.
I think you're right.
You do not hear a word of Chanderpaul. And that is unbelievable for someone for an 8-year span to average 69 in Test cricket. That is amazing.
There was a lot of criticism of Shiv Chanderpaul earlier on in his career. I mean, he was in Lara's shadow for the first little bit of it. Let's face it. But he was injured a lot. People were talked about him being frail, him being unable to convert. He had the same kind of challenges and criticism that Joe Root has had up until recently. You know, lots of 50s, but very little in the way of big centuries. And until they actually diagnosed him with bone spurs in his heel, he was injured a lot. He was unable to play Test cricket on a regular basis. Once he got that figured out, he was away. And actually, he was the guy, a bit like Alan Border, who just held West Indian batting together series after series and year after year, because he didn't get a lot of help at all in the back half of his career once Brian Lara retired. I mean, no disrespect to any of the players that batted with him, but he was in a different class to the rest of that West Indies team for half of his career, and there was no one that was on his level.
Yeah, Binksy, do you think that's it? Is it just the fact that his teams kind of lost more than they won? Is that why we don't talk about him?
Look, I definitely think so, but I do want to pick up on that point from Baldy. So, Baldy, you may have mentioned this in some of those statistics, but I saw an interesting stat. Played, as we mentioned, 100 and near on 160 test matches, I think. When Lara was playing, averaged 44. When Lara wasn't playing, averaged 70.
Yeah.
So really took that that mantle on in terms of, yeah, holding that side together. And look, I think probably played in that era where West Indies had sort of slowly started to decline, hadn't they? A lot of players moved into sort of franchise cricket and they didn't have that sort of consistency, particularly in that in that top order. But a thorn in England's side. And the thing I just really do want to reiterate from your comments, you've seen a lot of this when you kind of look at the analysis of techniques. The 5 or 6 seconds before the ball was bowled, you would never show that to your son, would you? Or daughter as the way to set up. But once the ball was on its way down, it was actually pretty classical, to be honest.
Mm, he was fantastic. And just to double back on the, you know, 44 with help, 70 without help, he won 7 Player of the Series awards throughout his career. And I think that's up there, like top 6, top 7, something like that. I don't have the stats to hand, but, you know, that's how little help he got and how important he was to the fortunes of the West Indies. That even though he lost a lot of cricket over the course of his career, he still managed to win Player of the Series 7 times.
That actually is remarkable when you think that he only had 39 test wins over his whole career.
Exactly.
And if he's won, and you know, probably you're thinking that 10, 12, 15 of them have come in those series that you're just talking about right there.
Well, we've alluded to it a couple of times throughout the course of the podcast. We are going to get to number 26, so the last person that we're going to talk about on this episode of the Hall of Fame. It is another member of that illustrious 10,000 run club. I'm sure this is going to be one of Baldy's cricketing heroes. He's also one of mine, Baldy, which I'm sure you'll appreciate. Who are we going to talk about at number 26?
Well, we're going to talk about the man who... he's had a lot of impact on cricket, but I think the greatest impact that this player has had in terms of the cricket world has been the captain's diary. I mean, we've all read a captain's diary. Everyone's got one now. Even if you're not captain, you can have a captain's diary nowadays. But Stephen Roger Waugh, I think that's his middle name. God, I better not have got that wrong.
With a D. With a
there
D.
you go. Stephen Roger Waugh, he was the man who, no, he didn't invent the captain's diary, but he popularized the captain's diary. So we're going to talk a little bit about his career. And I'm just looking down at the humble little Top Order podcast sporting bookcase there. And there's at least two or three captain's diaries in amongst them of Steve Waugh, of course, wearing the baggy green that he wore so often, even when he went to other sporting events at Wimbledon and courted controversy. But we're going to talk about his cricket career. We'll talk about 168 test matches, 10,927 test runs. That's 11th all-time. Average of 51.06, 32 hundreds, 50 half-centuries, and an average above replacement player of plus 9.5. Of course, he averaged 37 with the ball in test cricket until a back injury kind of curtailed that. He has best bowling figures of 5 for 28. He had 3 test fifers, no 10-fers, but he had an 8-for in test cricket. He has the most 90s in test cricket as well, 10 90s in test cricket. And, of course, famous for that 200 against the West Indies. He took on Ambrose and Walsh, and really that was the beginning of the end for the West Indies. And the end of the beginning, I think, for Australian cricket as they kind of met. And I look back at that series as, and dads will kind of be able to relate to this, at some point in your life, you will be playing sport against your son, and your son is on his way up in his life and you're on your way down. And there's a point where he beats you at basketball for the first time, or he bowls you out, genuinely bowls you out for the first time, and your son is on his way up in life and you're on your way down. And I feel like that's what that moment was in 1994-5 with that Australia-West Indies series. Australia was on the ascendancy and the West Indies were just starting to decline a little bit. And Steve Waugh was really at the forefront of that confrontation, that heavy confrontation, both physical and mental, between the Australia and the West Indies. Lots and lots of runs. Binksy, before we get into some of my stories, I just want to come to you. You mentioned him as one of your heroes. I think it's quite possible that you hold him in higher esteem and higher regard than I do.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, I probably do. And look, this is going to surprise a few people on the podcast. My two cricketing heroes are both Australian, Ian, Andrew Healy and Stephen Roger Waugh. Came across Steve Waugh as an eight-year-old kid. He actually played for my club back in Birmingham, Smethwick, and only played 3 games because a young then Martin Crowe was the overseas player for Somerset. Steve Waugh was the second overseas player for Somerset in that season. Martin Crowe broke down, and Steve Waugh was summoned from my club at Smethwick. And I'll tell a very quick anecdote on that. Somerset was so sorry that they'd had to rip him away from us, where he was going to play the whole season. They sent just a mere 4 players to replace him for the rest of the season. So they gave us a couple of batters, an off spinner and a medium pacer in exchange for Steve Waugh. He played, 3 games for Smethwick, 200s. And the game after he was summoned to go and play for Somerset, he actually got a 100 on county debut for Somerset down at Hampshire. But the story that resonates the most for me is, and probably where his career probably to an extent can really be defined as well, is he was a fantastic one-day player, you know, brought a lot of belief to that Australian side. And my dad was batting with him in a game where a runner ball was unheard of, and we needed, I think, 7 and over the last sort of 9 overs of the game to win. And my dad recalls a conversation. He was in the middle with him, and he said to him, "What do you reckon? We need We need 7 and over off the last 9. To which Steve Waugh just said, mate, we'll piss it. And they won it with an over to spare. So yeah, look, absolute hero for me, Baldy.
Probably Baldy, I guess, the most. I guess we've talked a bit before about Border's leadership, and you alluded to that Waugh was maybe the natural successor. I guess, can we do a compare and contrast? How do they actually stack up against each other in terms of their leadership? Because I feel like, you know, you talked about, Border's clashes, I suppose, with some of his players, but it seemed like there was a lot of love for Border, even with that Mr. Grumpy tag, whereas Waugh, it seemed like he did rub some people up the wrong way. I mean, definitely Waugh and him had their clashes at times.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing with Alan Border's sides is they were underdogs and they knew they were underdogs, right? So there is a bit of a coming together that happens with teams that know they're underdogs, because the only way that you can win is to come together and be more than the sum of your parts. And that's not to say that, you know, Steve Waugh's 41 wins, 9 losses, 7 draws, you know, that's best win ratio, first win percentage, second in draw percentage of test captains of all time who've captained more than 25 tests. There's nothing to write that record down and say, well, he didn't have a great relationship with his players. I think in the Australian cricket team, there are always going to be one or more factions, if you like, of one or more players that are just of a different mould. You know, they're different types of human beings, and not all human beings get along brilliantly in a team environment. Steve Waugh's teams were able to come together because he was so good at making them feel like they were the best cricket team in the world. Mm. And Steve Waugh's teams knew they were the best, trained like they were the best, went out on the cricket field and acted like they were the best 11 cricketers in the world, even if they weren't. Mm. You know, even if they had a Tim May or a Michael Kasprovich or something like that. Like a player that, if you went down the team sheet and you looked at him against his opposite number, you'd go, well, Darren Goff's probably got Kasprovich's number today. Or, you know, Suck Lane probably has Tim May's number today. But in the mind of that individual player that put the baggy green on, that cap made him invincible. Whether or not you should be wearing it at Wimbledon is another story. But Steve Waugh made his players feel like they were the best 11 cricketers in the world at that time. And Steve Waugh used, and I'll use his term, mental disintegration to its utmost effectiveness to make sure that the opposition knew at every single moment that his team and he and the bowler at the other end were the best cricketers in the world and you were dirt on their shoe. Now, whether or not you agree with that as a philosophy for playing cricket, some do, many don't, but that's what he was able to bring to his team and elevate them from a captain in Alan Border who brought them up from nothing. Mark Taylor, tremendous, tremendous tactical captain and understood the nous of trying to win games of test cricket with sometimes great attacks, sometimes not a lot. But he had the best, I think, tactical nous of a captain that I've ever seen. And Steve Waugh just took that to the next level and went, right, I've got all the talent in the world here. I don't really need to do anything special because if I get in trouble, I'm just going to roll out Warne and McGrath.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to roll out both Waugh brothers and Gilchrist and Hayden and Ponting and Damian Martin and you know, Justin Langer and all these guys. I mean, he had the best cattle of just about anyone other than maybe Lloyd and Viv Richards in the 80s in terms of players that he played with. But he perfected sledging, effectively. I mean, famously, you know, save some of that for me, when he's standing at the non-striker's end, is probably the best non-striker sledge I think I've ever heard.
Well, you dropped the World Cup is a pretty handy one as well.
Allegedly. I mean, we're not sure that he actually said that. So, but he definitely said to I think it was a medium pace bowler that's bowled some rubbish, and he was standing at the non-striker's end and definitely said to the bowler, yeah, just save some of that for me, which I think is great. Anyway, sledging. Either like it or you hate it.
And we've gone over time again. Binksy, you should take it. Any final thoughts and then take us out.
Yeah, look, no final thoughts from me. He's involved in a number of those sledges. Probably the Jamie Siddons one, which I'm sure everyone knows about, is probably my favourite one.
That's a fantastic one. I'd forgotten about that one.
Well, go on then. We'll indulge you just this once.
No, you tell it, Adam. You used it in a club game. It was brilliant.
Did I?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember you using it in the club game. So the sledge goes, ladies and gentlemen, that Steve Waugh played a rare Sheffield Shield game against South Australia, and Jamie Siddons was playing for South Australia. Tremendous batter. Probably should have played 20 or 30 tests, but he never did. Mm. And Steve Waugh walks out to bat for New South Wales with his baggy blue / baggy green cap on, because if you get a blue one, you always get a green one. Walked out and scratched around for 3 or 4 minutes, counted the fielders, walked out to square leg, stretched, went back to the crease, scratched around again. And Jamie Siddons was standing in the corner and says, "Come on, mate. It's not a test match." And, of course, Steve Waugh turns around immediately and says, "I know. You're here."
Yeah, I love that.
which has been used in a club game before as well. So tremendous, tremendous, tremendous sledge. He's got a bunch of them. Thank you, Steve, for your sledges and your captain's diaries.
Well, there you go. Other sledges, of course, are available. But that does end this episode of the Cricketing Hall of Fame. We'll be back with the next instalment, counting down from number 25, where we're going to include a politician, a bass player, and a squash enthusiast in the next instalment of the list. But for now, it's good night from us here at Top Order Towers. Good night. God bless. We'll see you soon.
Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.